The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Taxes Show.
It's the show you've all been waiting for. Until now. Until literally right now.
Now!
Literally right now. Literally. Now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey folks, welcome to hour two. Albin, we're going to be talking about General Patton.
Who?
Yes, he was a general, General Patton. And we're going to be talking about the book written by Robert Orlando. We had him on, I guess, a week or so ago. Yeah. And he compares Patton to Trump. It's kind of fascinating history. I love it. I have to start this segment. I meant to do it in the previous hour with a mea culpa. I was totally wrong. It was, in fact, Dylan Thomas and not Alfred Lord Tennyson who wrote the poem that says, "Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light." Use Dylan Thomas, a 20th century poet, with the 19th century poet Tennyson, because Tennyson wrote The Charge of the Light Brigade, which for some reason, I don't know why, but so Dick Morris, of course, was right about that. So it was Dylan Thomas. We have to say, again, if you're not signed up for my email list, folks, we're sending out a lot more information about these prayer calls. Every two or three nights, we're doing a prayer call to pray for the election and the nation. There are other prayer calls out there. I think I'm going to be on a second one tonight, actually, with Tony Perkins. If you're not getting our emails, please go to ericmetaxas.com and do please sign up, because it's very hard to get this information out via social media. I want to say also that I'm going to be sending out an email, I believe later today, containing all of the information about what Dick Morris was asking us to do and what the president was asking us to do, which is to write the head legislators in the states of the five swing states. And so there are 10 of them, roughly. We've got their email addresses. I've written a sample letter. You can just cut and paste and use that, or you can write your own. But I want to make it really easy so that everyone does this. Everyone in America ought to be concerned with transparency, with fair elections. If we do not have that, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you hear me on this. If we do not have that, we are no longer the United States of America. We are no longer a free people. If we cannot determine who our leaders will be, if we cannot trust the election process, we have sunk down to another tier of country than we've been for the last 244 years. We must be able to guarantee that a person's vote counts, that it will be that the vote will be counted, that illegal votes will be thrown out, that chicanery and fraud will be rooted out. That to me seems as basic as possible. And that anyone who disagrees with that, whether you're pro Biden or pro Trump or don't care, you're missing the whole idea of what it means to live in a free country or to keep the republic, which I talk about so often. So I'm asking you to take this seriously. When you get the newsletter, when you get these instructions, you can find them on my Facebook page now. But in case you prefer just to get it all buttoned up, I'll be sending out an email to that on that subject. And thanks to Dick Morris yesterday for clearly asking for this. I think there's so many people that say that they're praying, but people want to make a difference. They say, "What can I do?" Folks, you can do this. I did it yesterday. It took me probably about a half an hour, 45 minutes to email each of these. It's 9 or 10 leaders in these five key states, asking them simply to do their constitutional duty. They have a duty not to accede to the pressure of anyone. They have a duty to do. The Constitution lays it out. We quote the Constitution in the email that I'll send you, and Dick Morris, of course, quotes a chapter and verse. So it's very, very important.
Just a real quick update. I got an email from a woman named Annette saying that somebody's, when she phoned in to report to the, you know, the state heads of state and all that about the election, she said the mailbox was full and the emails are bouncing back or something. She said, we want you to know, do not give up. I was telling Eric this before. It almost feels like we're in the Battle of the Alamo. It really does. It feels like all these forces are coming against us. But then I also feel like half the people coming against us should actually be in the Alamo with us and fighting this battle, because it's a battle for everyone.
I have to say that, you know, this is a democracy. And so when someone is elected, we abide by that for 4 years. The people in the so-called resistance movement have, I think, fundamentally misunderstood America and how it works. The idea that you can say, I hate this guy, he's not my president. I don't understand how you can do that. I think Obama did horrible things. But I treated him as the president of the United States ought to be treated, with a modicum of respect for the office. We don't need to get into that too much farther. But it is important, folks, that you do what you can. And we're asking everybody to do this just as a duty. We are trying to preserve election integrity, and simply asking these folks in these states to do their constitutional duty. It's a very, very basic thing. All of us ought to be willing to do that. I mean, imagine the time you spend voting. Imagine the time you spend driving there and waiting there and going through that. And then somebody says to you, well, it didn't count this time. It didn't count last time. It hasn't counted the last three times because we don't know. We've got all this fraud. We've got all the, we have an obligation, folks. You know, you're not being called up to the draft. We're not asking for 3 years of your life or 18 months of your life, but we're asking you to do a basic thing. People say, what does it mean to keep the republic? If you can keep it, how do we keep it? Well, this is one of the ways we keep it, by every now and again doing basic things like voting, paying our taxes. This to me is in line with that this is a duty, and you must do your duty. This is a duty.
And people were asking, well, how did a great country go from way up here to way down here? Well, this is one of the ways that they happened. They had faulty voting machines. Something was amiss. And
well, it's when people lose respect. I mean, that this is the whole thing. And this is why we're on this knife edge, and every single person counts, not just your vote, but whether you do things like this, whether you pray, whether you encourage your neighbor to do the right thing. We're on a knife edge where some people have lost hope in things working. And when you do that and you say, yeah, who cares? You suddenly contribute to the whole thing being pulled down. So I'm here to tell you, it's not down. And it will only go down if folks like us don't do the right thing. And the right thing, as I said, is to do anything we can. One simple thing we can do, which I think everyone can do and ought to do, is to send these emails to these 9 or 10 state leaders in their legislatures. Constitutional makes very clear that it is their job to see that the votes are counted and dealt with correctly, and that they cannot certify anything until they've gone through the right process. It's up to us, we the people, to urge them to do that. So Dick Morris, God bless him, yesterday was sharing that with us. So I will send all that out in an email again, but you have to be on the email list. So go to ericmetaxas.com and sign up for that. If you're not following us on Twitter, if you're not following us on YouTube, our YouTube channel, The Eric Metaxas Show, things are kind of exploding, folks. The numbers are, we've never seen anything like it. And I think it's because people are finding it harder to know where to go to get facts, to get the truth. It's become harder. So we want to encourage you to support us however you can. Please patronize our sponsors. We know that MyPillow.com, if you use the code ERIC, that's one way of doing that. Mike Lindell is a tremendous patriot. We want to support him. If you go to mystore.com, which is related to that, I'm going to be having more of my books listed up there at mystore.com at really, really reasonable prices. Albin, tomorrow,
yes,
before we go, in a couple of seconds, I will be talking to Robert Orlando. But tomorrow, we have Lou Dobbs, Charlie Kirk, Roger Stone. We've got Lance Wallnau coming up. Kooky stuff, folks.
Dick Morris will be back next Tuesday with a report.
Tuesdays with Morris. All right, folks. Folks, you will remember my guest, Robert Orlando. We've had him on a few times. He has a new book out called The Tragedy of Patton. You can watch my interview with him on our YouTube channel, The Eric Metaxas Show, where we talked about the guts of that book. But it was one of those conversations where I said, we've got to get Robert Orlando back to keep talking about his book, The Tragedy of Patton, and particularly the connection that he saw and that I saw as we had the conversation between Patton and someone who considers Patton a personal hero, Donald J. Trump. Robert Orlando, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Eric. Glad to be back. It's a big subject, so it's hard to dive in and can't capture everything. This is a good idea we set it up this way.
I know. I guess, tell my audience, maybe they're either they don't know how to find it on the podcast or they didn't watch the video that we did, or they don't go to the YouTube channel. So just to sum up our previous conversation, you've written a book about Patton.
Correct. And,
let me
see if I could summarize and kind of give a quick setup.
Yeah.
The quick setup is I've been studying Patton for many years. I did a film called Silence Patton that was picked up by Sony Pictures. All of this could be found on www.silencepatton.com. Silencepatton.com. We can get to why the silence might also play into Trump in a little bit. So I wrote originally the story, but the expanse of the knowledge of the subject matter is much larger than the film. The film was largely that General Patton was a man prophetically warning us at the end of World War II that we were not done as long as the Soviet Union still had the power they did on the ground. But after studying it more and more, I started to think about, and you've written books before, and I think you'll appreciate this. I come at a subject matter at first with some questions, like riddles to solve. Then you get heavy into the material, and then you have to sequence it all into a story and make sense out of it and back up what you say. But sometimes you learn exactly why you're telling this story in a much deeper way, much later in the process. And I think this gets to the heart of it, and probably everything else we'll cover. And it's the idea of the death of the patrician, the patricide of the father figure. I didn't get to this until much later. I don't want to get like Freudian on you, but it's actually really significant that I saw him as a key point going from the 19th century idea of the father who fought the battle, the man of valor and honor, into the 20th century, which was a mechanized war. And it changed the dynamics, but not just on Patton in World War II, but it was, I think, reflective of the country generally. But the idea of the death of the father figure and remember, he went into war. He was 55 years old, fighting with 18 and 19 year olds across the board. So for me, it was like, how do you kind of drag this artifact out from the 19th century and try and shape it for the younger audience? I have no idea of that context, where it came from. But in that is the tragic sense too, that there's the loss of the gods of our fathers, you know, when culture starts to diminish or whatever. That's the deepest way to say it. But then it plays out in real events because he's not listened to. We ultimately don't fight the war we needed to fight.
Let me just frame this in case anybody missed this, because I don't want them to miss this part. That yep. Patton obviously was a hero of World War II. Mm-hmm. He was a kind of a unique individual, like one of those kinds of heroes or leaders that's a little bit rough around the edges.
An anti-hero. Yeah.
An extraordinary human being on any level. And at the end of the war, he said, okay, we've defeated the Nazis, but we really must continue and go toe-to-toe with the Soviet Union, because the Soviet Union is going to take over all of Eastern Europe, which is as great a loss in my mind, since my mother was caught behind the Iron Curtain in East Germany. I mean, all of those countries, all of those people for decades were under the boot of the Soviet Union, absolutely satanic nation, empire of evil that crushed their people in all of those nations, not just in what was Russia, but it became the Soviet Union. Patton, for some reason, saw this and is trying to get Eisenhower and the others to say, we can't stop now. We've defeated Hitler, but we need to continue. And they basically told him, shut up. We don't care. We disagree. I mean, to me, that is a tragedy. When you talk about the tragedy of Patton, that's to me the tragedy of the 20th century.
Well, I was giving you like the deeper groundwork, but that was the event that played out to be the metaphor for the tragedy. Churchill fought on his side, but Churchill had been fighting a long battle since 1939. So he was out of men. He didn't have a lot of leverage with Stalin, but he was on Patton's side trying to be an angel on his shoulder. He called the Yalta. We talked about Yalta, but it's significant because that's the official suicide note to let go of Eastern Europe to Stalin. And when they signed it, Churchill called it the Riviera on the Hades because it was written in Crimea. They signed off in Crimea. He called it the Riviera on the Hades. So he saw this hellish future and was pushing Eisenhower. Let Patton push them back all the way back to their original borders. He said, I'd like to meet the Russians as far east as possible. And they didn't let him do it.
Okay, so in a way, Robert, the other day in this conversation, we were talking about how in some ways Trump resembles Patton. And I wanted you to kind of help us understand what you mean by that. Mm-hmm. And before you answer this question, your film, Silence Patton, who was trying to silence him?
So it was a collective effort because you have, after the slapping incident, the famous slapping incident in Sicily, they silenced his guns. They basically
How famous is it? What famous slapping incident in Sicily?
Well, the media, I'm going to start with a Trump parallel that matches. So the media was constantly hunting him down, calling him a warmonger, trying to catch him in faux pas and on and on and on. And he was in a vicious battle in Italy with his boys, came back and he visited a hospital. And while he was in the hospital, he saw that they put under the same hospital tent both men who had literally their heads blown off in certain cases and men who were just, whether they were nervous or were cowards or whatever, they were unable to keep fighting. And they later came to see this was shell shock later. But he did not want men of honor under the same tent who just didn't have the guts or the nerve to keep fighting with men who truly gave their lives or were about to give their lives. So he slapped a soldier there, slapped his helmet off, and demanded he be kicked out of the place, even drew his gun to make his point. So after he did that, Eisenhower tried to keep it under for a while, and he was Patton's friend for a long time. That's a whole other show. But he was his friend for a long time, and he said to the news reporters, if you do this, if you let this out, we will lose our number one general in the war.
Wait a minute, Eisenhower said that?
Yeah, Eisenhower would keep covering up his faux pas at times. That's why it gets complicated at the end of the war, why he turns on him a bit. But he got tired of covering for him. But at this moment, he said, if you let this out to the media, if you let this out to the world, and the Germans found out about this. They couldn't even understand why you would fire your number one general for a slap. But this became the pivot point for Patton, because he was on the rise before that point. As a result of that slap, he gets pulled from the Normandy invasion as a leader and some others, but he gets pulled the most significant from Normandy, and the Americans can't advance. They can't advance in Sicily. In Italy, the mainland invasion, they can't advance in Normandy. And he becomes this figure where he has to be called back again to keep the operations moving
forward. But it almost sounds like the kind of idiocy we're dealing with today. I mean, you mean to tell me that in the mid-40s, we're fighting a war, and because of a PR thing, he gets pulled? This incredible general gets pulled? I mean, I have not heard that.
The media was all to the degree in which they could do it as journalists and not in the digital crazy world we're in. They were after him constantly, every word, to the point where he started to make fun of, he made jokes that when he would do interviews late, and he said, no, guys, I'm not going to talk anymore. Every time I say something, you take it out of context. And he kept getting demoted over and over again the media was putting us at high risk because they had no perspective of what this war really meant. And to pull your most aggressive general, who the Germans fear away, and the Soviets, by the way, was just crazy. It was lack of judgment.
I mean, it's bizarre. Well, let's talk about the parallels with Trump a little bit, because I promised that, and that's what we were talking about the other day. Why do you see that?
I made a little list. I'll give you a little. Both braggadocious and used exaggerated hyperbole. Both lived a life which I would call their kryptonite was their faux pas. It was more that they misspoke, didn't use the right language, were insensitive in their language, and it was their main kryptonite. It's what kept keeping them from their maximum success. Both were followed their whole lives and hated by the media, and ultimately the media, I think, brought both of them down. I think you can make the argument by the media calling the election early, they're still taking the lead on controlling Trump's success. You could argue the numbers and everything else, the complications of that. But basically, they determined he would be out from the day he was in all the way out. They both got in trouble for with Gold Star parents, believe it or not, in the case of Patton, related to the slap. Both impulsive with very driving personalities. And if I had to summarize one phrase, the French phrase, l'audace, toujours l'audace, which was from Napoleon. But it meant no matter what, just keep moving all the time until you break.
Actually, we're going to go to a break here, folks. When we come back, more about the tragedy of Patton.
Ain't it wonderful to be?
Hey there, folks. I'm talking to Robert Orlando, the author of a book on General Patton. It's called The Tragedy of Patton, A Soldier's Day. What is the subtitle? A Soldier's Day?
Date with Destiny.
Date with Destiny.
A Soldier's Date with Destiny.
Okay. You're talking about a character, larger-than-life character, General Patton. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting to me is that when I think of the world of the 1940s in America, it seems to me very different than the world we live in today. And so it surprises me that the press would have been all over him. Was the press similar to what it is today in a way? I mean, it's fascinating to think that that could have been going on in the middle of World War II.
They were, again, the press has a role, of course. We've lost that balance completely, but it has a role. But what it would do is it would use opportunities to take shots and break news. So muckraking journalists lived back then. They just didn't have the exposure level of today because they were writing newspapers. But they were doing the same thing. They were trying to catch him off guard. Also, the politics were similar. The press, unlike today to the degree, always leaned left. And Patton was the number one conservative in the country.
Unlike today? What are you talking about?
I think it's gone to an extreme, the left now, where back then you might say a newspaperman would be on the left by default, generally speaking, but they would try and represent the news objectively. They wouldn't be an arm of a political party, or at least they try to hide that. But they're all in bed with FDR. They loved FDR and his move to the left.
How is it that – I'm just curious because I don't know this this part of American history. In other words, how is it that Patton, in the middle of a war with Hitler, how does Patton come out as a conservative? I mean, he's a general. Why would he be perceived as conservative? I don't get that.
No, he had a reputation his whole life prior to that. He married in a patrician, a big family. He married, I think, the wealthiest family in the country, but was known for having patriotic conservative values. Some wanted him to run for president, actually, when he came back, which raises some of these questions. So he was always known as a conservative in his belief system, not how he did on the battlefield.
Is that it's hard for me to believe that in the 40s, most people didn't think that way. When you say, you know, very patriotic, I mean, I don't get the idea that, you know, FDR, for all of his, you know, big spending and everything and big government, that he really was anti-American. In other words, it didn't seem to me to get to that place yet. So how is being patriotic on the part of Patton make him seem conservative when you've got,
because,
you know, Frank Capra making movies?
Number one, he's a pure warrior. So when it comes, there are no loyalties. You're pro-American no matter what. But in the case of the geopolitical forces at work now. You have to realize the whole world's going from the imperial, you know, the British Empire, which FDR despised Churchill and the whole power that the British Empire had. But I think with naivete, goodwill, well-intentioned again, he was letting the Russian Empire slowly take over and become replaced basically what the British Empire was. And that's from a deeper level what Patton knew. He understood that the world was shifting. So FDR didn't realize there was a whole shift of the Reds and coming to the West and all. So yes, there was a loosening up of...
Well, you say he didn't realize it. Did he realize it? Was he like Lillian Hellman and Dashiell Hammett and many others? Was he pro-Soviet?
At FDR? The end of his life, he confessed to Avril Harriman, I believe, who was, I think, Secretary of State, or double check me. He said every promise that Stalin made, he did not keep. This was like one of the last quotes in his life. He came to that conclusion later in his life. But before that, it was Uncle Joe. And, you know, we just have to play nice with them. Yeah, they don't fight wars like we fight. He made a lot of concessions and ultimately didn't realize what was going on. If I could circle back quickly to Yalta. The reason why Yalta is so important, and this is the genius, the dark genius of Stalin, is that he understood that if he had unconditional surrender at the end of this war, this answers the question about Berlin and why they don't listen to Patton and everything, said he made an agreement that Stalin could have Berlin, unconditional. So people don't realize this, but as they're getting to the end of the war, the Germans are throwing out all kinds of signs to the Americans and the Allies. We want to surrender with you. We want to stop the war early. We want to get out of this. They were defeated after the battle in Stalingrad. So the truth is they had signed like a death notice, and that's the sadness of what you said, the abandonment of Eastern Europe, because they had signed a death notice that they had to give Berlin to Stalin in any condition. And as long as he knew that, he had the chip, the crown jewel to hold on to Berlin. And that's how he gets Eastern Germany.
I guess if you want to really despise politicians, this is another example. We're talking about the lives of many, many, many millions of human beings sold out by politicians, whether it's FDR or Eisenhower. It really takes a lion-hearted man to stand up to this kind of stuff. Patton, it seems to me, was that kind of a man. But in the case of World War II and the story we're telling, he was defeated by these weak, misguided leaders. I mean, if you didn't see the threat that he saw,
this might help you here. Excuse me one second. This might help. One of the scholars in the film said, you have to realize he's part of an orchestra. So he's the lead saxophone player, but he's not the conductor. So when you think of how geopolitical forces operate on actors on the ground, like even a president, or whatever, you have to understand that they're playing against the forces that are much stronger than they are. Like in our case, maybe the tech people and the funding in the Washington Post. And it's not just a battle, you know, or mano a mano. This is a real battle. So they can't win that fight because alone the forces are so big. So what they do is you just need this kind of John the Baptist type guy who said, I'm going to do as much as I can. But he fought that his entire career.
We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back. Final segment, talking to the author of The Tragedy of Patton, Robert Orlando. Folks, I'm talking to Robert Orlando. The book is The Tragedy of Patton. And I guess, Robert, we're talking about a lot of stuff at once here, but I see parallels with China. In other words, if you are like Joe Biden, for example, you say, well, maybe China's not our pal, but they're not the big boogeyman and we need to, you know, be chest bumping with them and challenging them. Trump doesn't see it that way. He sees them as, you know, as wicked communists who have done many, many bad things, and we need to counter them. It's the right thing to do. Patton saw that with the Soviet Union. It's a fascinating parallel to me, in a way, that this could be happening again, where you have people who are part of the establishment. They're kind of willing to look the other way, but millions, and in this case, billions of lives are on the line today if we don't see the threat.
No, and that's the point about these things never go away. With all this hype about the utopia coming, this wisdom is still lost. And I'll add one chip to that would be one event. You know, I did the Divine Plan also. So originally when I pitched this story to Hollywood, I thought it was Patton, Nixon, Reagan. So it was, you know, the Patton warning us, they don't listen, it starts the Cold War. You know, Nixon wants to do detente, wants to do a dance, who wind up fighting all of these mini wars around the country. And then Reagan takes a Reagan to come and end it. But the truth is it's coming back again. And when I traveled doing the Divine Plan, when I spoke to audiences, I always said, they said, well, knowing this now, what would you look at in the modern world? I'd say, it's not Russia, it's China. It's the subtlety of people not understanding that the best defense is an offense. And people, I think it's part of the leisure class and AOC's. I can't believe the language coming at AOC. And I'm not trying to be a partisan for no reason, but the naivete of listening to this again, you're like, they're playing the same, the keyboard player's playing the same tune again, and here we go again. And, you know, it's going to take
a look. What we're talking about here is the inability to really understand the deeper issue, right? I don't care the name of the country. The question is, when you're talking about what we call communism, totalitarianism, all the values, the biblical values of the West, the sanctity of the individual, that every human being is sacred, that the people should have the right to determine their government and their future, all of those ideas are constantly embattled. We live in a fallen world. I mean, you're a Christian, I'm a Christian. We understand this is not just politics. And the forces of darkness, of course, don't believe in that. So whether it's the Nazis or whether it's the Soviet Union or whether it's China, they believe human beings are expendable. We can kill that person and we can sell their organs and make money. We can do whatever we need to do. We have no ultimate values except our own power. That is one way of seeing things, which I think of as satanic. And today, there's no question that the locus of that would be the Communist Party of China. I don't know how else you would say it.
So let me tie this back into where we started with the idea of tragedy. So again, if you go with the West is the combination of Jerusalem and Greece, right? It's both. It's the class. But the idea of tragedy also is born through in the cross. So what I would argue is that, and this is a bit philosophical, but when leisure classes take over and naivete, people don't have life experience, but are given great deals of power. The youth are going to save us. Yeah. Like youth have ever known anything about the world, by the way. Right. But if you think about that and people talking that way, it's because they have never embraced the tragic sense, you know, the big comma of life. When you face tragedy, when you have to face an enemy, when you have to face oppression, how do you see the world then, Mr. Marx? You know, how do you see it then? What's your reaction to it? Is a reaction of faith? Is it back to a utopia again? You just have the wrong people in power, so you got to move them out like Marx? Like, when do you stop that dance of avoiding the tragic sense, which I think is the Christian message? And by the way, Patton was a Christian, by the way. I just want to make that clear. Our last show, we didn't get that clear. He was not an Orthodox Christian, but he was a man of faith, no doubt. And he embraced the Proverbs and let my enemies not win over me and the Psalm 23. I mean, he was a big fan of faith.
A big fan of faith.
Yes.
Not so shallow. I know you don't mean it that way. Just kind of funny. It's kind of like Eisenhower. Like, I think religion is important. It doesn't matter what you believe, as long as you've got some kind of religion. But you're not talking about that. You're talking about somebody who saw good and evil and who understood that
he embraced that faith is part of his journey to be a whole and complete person and be redeemed. I'm saying he's not a big fan of the idea of faith as not being some superstition, but he played it right through his life on the ground.
Well, one of the things that we have seen in history always, and it's naivete, and usually the youth are most guilty of it, but not just the youth, but comfortable adults. In other words, adults who have not suffered, the leisure classes, as you put it, people who have not been through the Depression or through any tragedy or anything like that. There's a naivete. They just want to bat it away. They don't want to believe that evil exists. They don't want to believe that anything could be evil, whether it's the Soviet Union or whether it was in his time Hitler or whether today it's the Chinese Communist Party. They want to play patty cake with evil because they don't believe in evil. That's something that you see over and over and over again. And then you have people like Reagan or in this case, Trump, who say, no, 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 there's an evil empire. We need to fight. And people say, fight? I find fighting just so divisive. I mean, that's kind of the same old story.
Well, flesh out your idea about China. So what would, if we're playing Marx, the game at home, Marx would say, well, you need the state to take over for a period of time to kind of diminish the power of capitalism and free markets. But, and people said to him, well, what about this whole dictatorship thing? Well, we need that just for a little while, and then it'll pass on, and then they'll hand it over to the enlightened philosopher kings. We've had this dance over and over again.
Well, I think the problem is, Robert, and we're going to be out of time, but the bottom line is, if you have a biblical view,
yes,
the Bible says man is fallen and sinful. So if you give people ultimate power, the Bible says they will abuse it. They won't use it for a little period of time, and then, you know, say, okay, I'm done now. I'm going to hand over the weapons. No, it doesn't work that way. And it's never worked that way in history. But there are people over and over who naively believe, no, 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 this time it will work. We've got 30 seconds. Go ahead.
No, and I think that's the lesson. If I'm wrapping up on everything, I think that where you get your Pattons or your Trumps or your Reagans is they become patricians who see enough of the old world but want to protect the common man and the new one. But the power is slipping away, so their voices are being silenced, you know, so they don't have the same urgency. No one's, it's like, let grandpa die off. He comes from that old place where they use guns and stuff, you know.
Right, right. So guns, all those divisive weapons and things. We're out of time, but look, this is fantastic. Congratulations on the book, The Tragedy of Patton. We'll continue the conversation another time. Thank you, Robert Orlando.
Thank you. Really appreciate it, Eric.
Hey, folks, what a day. What a day. Alvin and I have what we think of as exciting news in our world. This is really exciting news. We'd like to share it with you. Alvin, what's our exciting news?
Oh, this is so exciting. Those mugs are back on the website at shopmetaxas.com.
What? Did you say that we have mugs for sale at shopmetaxas.com? That's crazy talk. Are you sure about this?
I am really sure. Some very beautiful mugs
Look, people think I'm crazy for saying that I think Trump won the election and it will be proved and that he will be inaugurated in January. People think I'm crazy. And you're telling me you think we're selling Eric Metaxas Show mugs at shopmetaxas.com? Is that what you said?
Yep. They're back on the website. Very popular in the hats.
Shopmetaxas.com.
Yes. T-shirts, hats.
Everything. I think we're confusing people. Let's be clear. Our website is metaxastalk.com. That's the radio website.
Yes.
If you go there, you can click on the radio show store where we sell T-shirts very cheap. Folks, trust me when I tell you we're not making money. T-shirts, hats, and now mugs. I'm taking that on faith, Alvin. Mugs.
They're there.
These mugs are so glorious. Okay. So I want to say that. Also, I want to say if you want to get signed copies of my three caveman books, Donald Drains the Swamp, Donald Builds the Wall. These are prophetic statements appropriate for children. And Donald and the Fake News.
Oh, yeah.
If you want autographed copies of those, you can also go to our radio website, metaxastalk.com. Click on the banner for Shop Metaxas or go to shopmetaxas.com. So there's all kinds of stuff there. But we also should say, we should say that if you go to Mike Lindell to mypillow.com, I want to remind folks, everything you get there, when you put in the code ERIC, you get a huge discount. You get our discount. And our radio show gets credit for that as opposed to some evil Fox News show getting credit for their code. So please encourage folks to use our code ERIC. Also, as you know, Mike Lindell has created mystore.com. You can link to it through mypillow.com. And on there, you can get my three caveman books so cheap that now I'm not kidding. We got the statement, we're losing money, okay?
Yeah.
We need to kind of fix that because we don't want to lose money, but we're not there to make money. We're there to get these books out to you. So if you go to mystore.com, you will see Donald and the Fake News, Donald Drains the Swamp, Donald Builds the Wall. And we're going to be linking it to my We're going to put out a patriotic package that has If You Can Keep It, and that also has Yankee Doodle Mugsy. So you can buy all five patriotic books at a crazy price. We're also going to have a Christmas package. You remember not Yankee Doodle Mugsy. That's the July 4th book. That's the patriotic book. But you remember Uncle Mugsy and the Terrible Twins of Christmas? We will have that available. And we will have the Birthday ABC available. All these books are written by me and illustrated by Tim Raglan. He's the super creative genius who's been my friend for over 30 years and a real friend. You know, when time passes, you know who your friends are. What a friend, what a dear friend he is. But he's the illustrator on all these books. He's a super genius. When you see the Mugsy books and the Birthday ABC, you see what he's capable of. The Caveman books are kind of more of his abbreviated cartoon style. But we're going to have all those books up at mystore.com very soon. We want you to begin thinking about Christmas. Remember? Yes, Christmas is going to happen this year. I declare it in the name of the Lord. Albin, it's just so much fun talking about products.
Yes.
Do we have any other products for our friends to buy? Oh, yes, yes. If you want my books, most of the books that I have written, the adult books, go to SocratesInTheCity.com. The best prices are there, and autographed, I'm sorry, not the best prices, but autographed copies of all my books, but good prices. Check it out.